We're going to learn some things in the next couple of hours that are really going to make you mad. If they don't, they will. Two gentlemen have agreed to join the program tonight to talk about their experiences, and they are full of information that is disturbing, disarming, if not downright criminal. And I will be the first to suggest that there has been criminal goings on. There is criminal activity occurring at the highest levels of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, American big agribusiness, multinational companies, and so forth. This is going to be pretty amazing, so I want you to pay close attention. Ron Wilson and Bill Shepard are my guests, and we are certainly in crisis here in the United States in terms of American agriculture. Ron, are you there?
Yes, Jeff, I am.
Hi, thanks for being here. Let's introduce you and ask you, if you would, just to tell our listeners about yourself a little bit.
All right. I'm a family farmer in the Yakima Valley. Basically, mainly in apples, and have been for the last several years. Have enjoyed it. It's been a tough road to hoe, but we raised a family doing it. The sad part of the story is that there's a trend, and the trend is not going up, it's going down.
Right.
And before we get too much further, I've got to comment that the news today around here, of being in Yakima, of course, is Mount St. Helens blowing 25 years ago.
I would never, if someone had asked me how long ago, I would have said 15, mm-hmm. 16 years ago. 25 years ago.
25 years ago, blew at 8:32 in the morning.
It just doesn't seem that long ago, does it to you?
No, it does not. We are roughly 60 miles east, northeast of the mountain.
Right. Well, you got dusted then.
Pretty good. It got heavier as you went a little further north.
Mm-hmm.
It took about an hour for the ash and the plume to get here, and it went from a bright, clear day to hazy, dark, to black by noon.
It was black.
Huh. Yes, and the sun was just a red dot through the icky blackness. And we had this heavy ash falling with a sulfuric smell and odor to it. And
could you hear anything 60 miles away? Did you hear any rumbling?
I was inside a building when it happened. People that were outside thought they heard something like a sonic boom.
Uh-huh.
And then the news came on, and everybody was telling everybody, and everybody kind of went into a mild panic, not knowing what to do. Anyway, we survived it, got through it. It was quite an experience.
Fascinating event of Mother Nature on the planet.
Yes, and it's probably what built these beautiful, fertile soils.
There, I was going to ask about the residual effects of that dusting of ash and powder. Did it have any impact on the soil?
It is what's built these productive soils up over the thousands of years. It was interesting is we had the apples were small size, and we didn't know what to do with that heavy ash and dust on there. And I remember I went out with a speed sprayer and tried to blow it off, wash it off, and all I did was cake it on there.
Huh.
You feel better doing something, and sometimes doing nothing is the best recourse.
Well, interesting. Well, rain would have done the same thing had it rained,
right.
Probably.
It turned out all right eventually. Everybody bought a lot of extra air filters for the car and changed oil and air cleaners quite often to prevent.
I remember all that, and I still don't believe it was 25 years ago.
Mm, time does fly, doesn't it?
Gee, it's like, well, going faster than that. All right, that is Ron Wilson. Let's say hello to our second guest now, Mr. Bill Shepard. Hello, Bill. Thanks again for being here tonight.
Greetings.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a lifelong farmer in southwest Oklahoma. I live in an area where we have a diversified agricultural production, from the grains to the hay to lots of irrigated horticultural crops, melons, of different kinds of fruits and vegetables. Just a little bit of background: my family, the Shepherd family, started farming in what is now the state of Virginia in the year 1637. And so my family's been continuously farming in this country for quite a while. A little bit of just another side note for me. I am a volunteer counselor for the Willie Nelson Farm Aid Program, And in Oklahoma, we have a nonprofit organization that addresses agricultural crisis as well. And it's called the National Farm Crisis Coalition. So I'm affiliated with both of those groups.
Well, you've done an awful lot of work to help many, many thousands of American farmers. How bad is it right now, Bill Shepard? You know, the big-time agribusiness guys with the big bucks and all the rest of it, they're going to make it no matter what. But we're talking about Americans who are literally trying to support this country, as in many cases their families have for generations. How bad is it?
Well, give you just a little bit of insight, I've handled cases in the last 12 months from 43 of the 48 continental states. So whenever I tell you how bad it is, the pressures on the family farmer are greater than I've ever seen or read about them in history in this nation.
Greatest in American history.
I've ever seen. Yes.
And now these pressures are having in some cases tragic results.
Absolutely, because there's a move from every facet of agriculture, from the credit side, from the government side, from the market side, from the production side. There's a move to globalize agriculture and to put it in the hands of corporate farming.
And to ensure that it stays there with things like the Terminator seed and other technologies which are not what we want.
Well, certainly. Whenever you read the insight that the corporations provide, the large multinational corporations, by and large, agricultural policy today is a result of public policy. And public policy says that the agricultural resources of this country are so important that we can't trust them in the hands of family farmers.
Trust them.
Right, can't trust the agricultural resources in the hands of family farmers, and it was in the hands of family farmers that built and produced the largest food production system in the world.
That's right, most successful.
And the safest.
I was going to say, the cleanest, safest, most wholesome food probably ever grown in recorded history was grown right here, and I hate to use the past tense, but was is the operative word. It's changing.
Yes, every farmer that I know strives to produce the highest quality, the most marketable kind of a crop.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, they're penalized by trying to produce a crop that has any nutrition to it, that has any quality, if you will.
All right, how does that happen? How is a farmer penalized for producing a crop, as you just described, which has any really substantial, significant nutrition, vitamin, mineral content, enzymes, and the rest of it? What's going on to penalize them? We're going to hear from Ron about this in just a minute.
Well, just kind of a thread here, if you will. The human body is comprised of 78 minerals, 44 from the ocean, 34 from the land. The farmers today can only access from the large corporate fertilizer companies can only access three of those minerals, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
That's it.
Well, and what about the other 75 that comprise our body? And if the minerals aren't in the soil, they certainly don't have the capacity for the plant to take them through the root system and have them in the plant tissue or in the fruit or the nut or like peanuts or whatever the plant's producing, whatever the productive part of the plant that we're consuming, it's absolutely void of that kind of mineral availability.
Wow. I guess that brings us back to the soil. Ron Olson, you've got good soil where you are in Yakima Valley in Washington.
Yes, sir.
The same cannot be said for many other parts of the country, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. We, when production was more profitable, we really worked hard at maintaining proper soil tilth, healthy plants, vines, trees. We used to do a lot of tissue sampling, leaf analysis, supplementing any deficiencies we went through the growing season, with the idea and the concept that it all paid off with a healthier plant, a healthier product, and a happy consumer.
Let's we'll take a little break here, but what a noble thesis for any farmer to ply his or her trade, and that's what it was all about. And I don't think I'll bet that many people listening didn't really understand it, don't think about it. They just go to the supermarket and, hey, it looks great, must be great, and they buy it. But not so. And the idea of literally working continually to check and monitor not only plant tissues but the soil is something that a lot of Americans can take comfort in. But unfortunately, it's not being practiced like it should be or was. We'll be right back with Ron Wilson and Bill Shepherd in just a couple minutes. Okay, we're back with Ron Wilson and Bill Shepherd. Ron is an apple farmer in the Yakima Valley, and Bill has been involved with farming his family for generations. He's worked with... We're going to talk about some of the tragedies of the American farmer and farm family with Bill in just a couple of minutes. But Ron is talking about how it used to be that farmers would do everything they possibly could using science, common sense, and the most wholesome of ingredients to raise the best possible crops. In expectation, of course, as any businessman or woman, that they would make a reasonable return on it and be able to support themselves. So tell us what happened, Ron Wilson.
Well, sadly, over time, things have changed, and not for the better. We find that there has been quite a concentration on the purchasing side. As an example, in apples, a few years back, there were 150 apple buyers in this nation.
All right, let me make this real clear to folks. 150 apple buyers, meaning,
right.
Meaning companies?
For the mom-and-pop stores, for the chains,
okay.
For the retail outlets.
These brokers?
Basically, yes,
okay.
Brokers. Today,
All right.
There are predominantly five.
That's it?
That's it.
All right. Well, you folks figure it out right away, don't you? Where there's competition, there's a healthy marketplace, price stability, a reasonable approach to making crops and any commodities available to the public. When you have only five controlling them, well, you finish the story.
And if you don't move your product and get in line with what those five large purchasers want, you don't move your product. So if you want to view it as a funnel, there's a bottleneck. Now, along with that, we find that retail outlets that used to work on about a 50% markup on fruits, today I can show you 100-300% markup.
Wait a minute. Now, for our listeners, let's just take a supermarket chain. You're talking about a retail outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Safeway, whatever, doesn't matter. Used to make a 50% markup on an apple. Now you're talking 300% markup?
Yes, a box of apples contains 40 pounds. And I think you'll find across the land in the better quality stores,
mm-hmm.
The price of apples are going to run roughly $1 to $2 a pound.
Right.
Depending on the variety.
Right.
So at $1.50, 40-pound box, that's $60.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. This year, this crop out of this state is leaving the packing shed for $8, $10, once in a while $12 a box. The majority of it around $10 a box. That's a 40-pound pack box.
$10 a box, and they're retailing it ultimately for $60 a box. Who's making
right.
all the money?
Well, it isn't too hard to figure out.
Well,
now, out of that $10, very few growers have their own packing lines. Packing is done by large corporations. And there's a fee connected for that of about $8.
A box?
A box.
Charge $8 a box to what, wash and pack your apples?
To sort and wash, pack, and sell.
Okay.
Yeah. So that leaves $1 to $2 maybe. At the very best, on a year like this, it's just wholesale slaughter out here.
Wait a minute. Did you just say you're making $1 to $2 a box?
Right. 40-pound box.
Not making. That's the gross.
That's the gross.
That's before you deduct your costs.
Right.
You're almost broke.
Oh, we are broke. It's been tough sledding for a number of years. Personally, I have felt it since NAFTA really kicked in the mid-90s.
Hmm.
It's been pretty much a downhill slide since then.
Mm-hmm.
I know growers this year that have gotten bills back from their packing shed. They didn't make a dime. They put all the input costs into that crop of pruning, thinning maybe 2 or 3 times, the fertilizer, the land taxes, the sprays, everything, the harvest, the whole ball of wax, and they absolutely got zilch back.
They got a bill.
Got a bill. Usually the warehouse will write that bill off because they hope they're around for next year.
How nice. Or they'll float it for a low interest rate.
Right. Right. But it's actually beyond belief. The old timers around here tell about their parents raising apples in the Depression days.
Mm-hmm.
It was tough sledding.
Yeah.
But if you were an apple grower, you had some change in your pocket. And it bought quite a bit. And the word here is that this is the worst scenario ever in the apple business. Now, I know it's hard for the consumer to understand that when they go into the stores and they're paying roughly $1 to $2 a pound, depending on the variety and the grade of it.
Right.
I'd like to just throw in here that there's tremendous amounts of money made with food. It's not on the production end of it.
Marketing and merchandising.
Exactly. One of the large chains came into our area, built a brand new store, cost them $1.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
The manager was told he had to pay for that within 1 year or he would be fired.
Really?
And he did pay for it in 1 year.
A supermarket store. Okay, I hope all you people are paying close attention. That's an amazing story in and of itself. All right, hold on. Be right back with Ron Wilson and Bill Shepherd in just a couple minutes. Amazing. Okay, and we're back. Special guest tonight, Bill Shepherd and Ron Wilson, the crisis in American agriculture. Ron, let's finish that thread. The supermarket manager told that he had 1 year to basically generate enough income to pay for the cost of the store. However that broke down for the particular corporation, I wouldn't know, but he did it. And there's a tremendous markup in food. It sounds to me like it's almost equivalent to that of the furniture industry, which is astronomical in its markups. I mean, the cost of a mattress and so forth. Yeah, you can spend, $1,500 and they can make it an hour or two with $6 an hour labor. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, same idea. Gouging the consumer.
Well, and if you carry that to its ultimate, you're dealing with price gouging, possibly price fixing, antitrust action.
Sure. Well, you know, it used to be, I remember when I was a kid, antitrust was something that was talked about quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And antitrust prosecutions have all but disappeared now. In the age of the big merger acquisition, it seems like antitrust is a theory that has been relegated to the dusty shelves of the Economics Museum and, wherever. But you're right.
Yeah, it's really sad because the consumer, in my humble opinion, does not need to pay any more for the product to keep the family farm going and to provide a safe, stable food supply. It has turned where there's not enough coming back to keep the independent producer going.
Is this by design? I think we talked the other day, Ron, and I ask you, is this an organized effort at some level, above and beyond simple greed, which is hideous enough, to wipe out the independent grower and allow the big corporations, big agribusiness, to suck up more and more of the independent operations.
Well, whether it's by design or not, that is exactly what's happening. And with global transportation availability now, when we ask for more to survive, we're told that they can bring it in cheaper from other countries. And, of course, that's a whole subject of itself.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in a minute. Let's shift over to Bill Shepherd now. And anything to add to this idea, Bill? It's certainly something that's not restricted to the apple-growing industry.
No, absolutely not. I talked to a sweet potato grower in South Carolina that had one of the best crops in years in his county, and they wouldn't even bring enough to pay for the cost of digging.
Come on.
The cost of digging was about 2 cents a pound, and the producer couldn't even get paid enough to dig the potatoes. They just set out in the field and rotted.
So they weren't even close. No way to even break even.
No, and on that day I went to the marketplace here in my local town, and the price of sweet potatoes was 79 cents a pound. And here I was just talking to a sweet potato grower in one of the best sweet potato growing areas in the nation, and they couldn't even dig the potatoes.
They just sat there and rotted.
Right.
And amazing. Were these sweet potatoes you saw on the market American grown? Do we know?
I couldn't tell.
They didn't label them.
There's absolutely no indication as to where the point of origin was.
Okay, so spell it out for us again, how this can possibly happen. Who's making all the money? The same scenario, I guess, that Ron just shared with us.
Well, it's the entire food distribution system, the marketing system, and the distribution system is controlled by basically the same five corporations. In some instances, you can narrow it down to even three large corporations that control virtually 90% of the food supply in the nation. And they use the government assistance. They use their positions, their subsidiaries. They do everything imaginable to in their food distribution systems. For example, if there's a local watermelon grower just 3 miles from me, and he went down to the local supermarket here in the middle of agriculture country in Southwest Oklahoma, and said, I've got some watermelons to sell you. And the produce manager said, okay, I'll buy them. We'll have locally grown fresh watermelon.
Sure.
The next day, the produce manager called my friend and said, sorry, our distributor said that if we don't buy watermelons, we're not buying anything. We've got to take everything that they sell, and we can't buy anything from an outside source.
So it sounds almost like a dictatorship. You buy everything from your distributor, and you're not allowed to buy anything on an independent level anymore if you run any kind of a normal business. That's what it amounts to now. That's the normal way things are done. You're enslaved to your distributor.
And so, for example, one of the large food distribution companies is here in Oklahoma, and so I've been with family farmers whenever we've gone to that food distribution company and said, would you handle in this whole area? Would you handle some watermelons or cantaloupes or broccoli or whatever it was they were growing? And they said, well, we charge a $10,000 slotting fee.
What?
A $10,000 slotting fee to create a slot in our computers to add your item. At the end of 30 days, if we don't believe that it's moving according to our expectations, we have the right to drop it.
And
without exception, anyone that I know that has ever paid the $10,000 to try that has always been dropped off at the end of the first month and lost the $10,000. So, you know, that's a pretty expensive lesson to learn.
That's criminal. Who are they buying from then if they're not buying from the independent people?
We're buying from their multinational subsidiaries that are located in Central and South America and other third world countries around the world. So that now by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's own figures, July 2003, they announced that of the fruits and vegetables in the grocery store, 63% of them are imported.
63% now.
Yeah. Now, you understand that in some times of the year, like, for example, during the winter time, whenever some of the agricultural production has shut down here in the United States, mm-hmm. there may be certain points whenever as much as 90% of the total fruits and vegetables are imported from third world countries. And the production coming from these third world countries, if I may, you know, describe that to you.
Yeah, just do it after the break. This is bad news. So I think you folks can see that cheap imports now are dooming many independent, small, and even medium American farmers, farm families, small companies. They just literally cannot, they are not allowed to sell their products to the distribution centers, the distributors, which have a stranglehold on the entire industry. They're frozen out. You want to pay $10,000 to get a slot on their computer? Good luck. You just heard what will happen to that money after a couple of months. American agribusiness is, at least on the medium and small level, being killed off. It's pretty obvious. Back in just a minute. Okay, Jeff Rentz back with Ron Wilson and Bill Shepard. You're getting it straight from the folks who do the business of raising our crops and who work with those who do. The distributors, as you're hearing, are now telling our farmers that they basically will not buy from them. They're out of luck in many cases. Or as Ron Wilson explained, they're giving them next to nothing for their crops because of imports. Why the distributors have cheap imports to deal, and why pay even anything reasonable for American agricultural products when they don't have to? We're going to talk about the importing of crops and how they're raised and grown and what we can expect from them, what we're getting in the markets now a little bit later. But go ahead, Bill, with the rest of your story on this.
Well, I was just going to tell you about a trip that I took to Mexico a few years back, and oh, yeah. I went to a vegetable growing area northwest of Mexico City near Celaya.
Kind of a good one?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There was a very large United States corporation there that was packing vegetables, and I went out to a field where I drove down the road to where they were picking broccoli. The pickers were out picking broccoli, and there were at least 250 people out in the field wearing either bonnets or sombreros picking broccoli, bent over, picking the broccoli and putting mm-hmm. it in the box.
Can you name the company? You don't have to.
A Green Giant was what I saw on the sign.
That's fair enough. Facts are facts.
And they were spraying over the tops of those pickers. There were aerial applicators. Two airplanes were flying the field, spraying right on top of those people picking. And I went to the end of the field where there were some people
You're
involved.
You're kidding me. The little biplanes, the little spray plane, or single-wing plane, mono-wing planes, were spraying the pickers in the fields.
Spraying the broccoli with the pickers out there.
I got it. This is unbelievable. All right.
Taking the broccoli crowns and putting them in the box, and I went down to the end of the field, and I thought, well, maybe they're spraying just a harmless spray. And they were, asked one of the men there that was kind of a field manager and field supervisor, and he said they were spraying it with DDT. Well, DDT has never been approved in the United States to be applied to
any crop
that's consumed. And it's been outlawed in the United States for 30 years or so.
Well, I'm sure Green Giant labeled that on the box, didn't it? Sprayed with DDT.
As a matter of fact, on the box that I went to their processing plant, on the box it said a product of the United States of America.
Oh, that's a criminal fraud in my book, right there.
Well, they said that they could do that because they were a corporation formed within the United States, and wherever they went, they took that corporate protection with them. And
that
so they were really growing under that corporate umbrella of wherever they were producing. And
It's a lie. It's deceit, it's fraud, and it's wrong. And I think everybody listening realizes that, and it probably happens all the time. This is unbelievable. Not only are they killing those people, but they're putting poison on the crops to be consumed by America. Ever try to wash a head of broccoli, folks? Not really easy to do. And the DDT settles right down in there. And of course, as anyone will tell you in agriculture, it goes into the soil and is uptaken by the next crops that are planted and raised in that soil. And unless it breaks down for some reason, which DDT does not easily. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, that particular crop was being irrigated, and the crops around there, the melons, the cucumbers, and so forth, were being irrigated by water, untreated sewage lagoon water from Mexico City.
Oh, really? And they probably attempt to slap a label of organically raised or organically grown, who knows, fertilizers. So they're taking untreated raw human sewage and fertilizing the crops, raising them in that, and we know it's in human sludge now, and sewage, heavy metals, pharmaceuticals, you name it. And so they're going to raise the crops, and as they're raising them, they're sprayed umpteen times with everything probably from DDT to, well, who knows what else they spray them with. And then they put it in a box, and it says, product of the United States. And the consumer will say, ah, it's an American product, it's safe.
And you can drive to the border at Laredo, for example, which is just straight south of where I live, and the trucks bringing agricultural produce over from Mexico. Mm-hmm. There was 12 miles of semi-trucks bringing raw agricultural products over in boxes, and they're being brought over here and repacked to where they show that they're produced in the United States.
12 miles of trucks, is that unusual?
I don't know. That's my only encounter with the border. It seemed like a long line of trucks whenever I saw it. It's just whenever I went through the whole agricultural growing area in Mexico, uh-huh. it's just sickening to see that we have to take Ron Wilson's apples and he has to compete with those apples grown under those kind of production conditions in a third world country.
Ron, this is I'm sure shocking to many people listening, if not most. It's particularly despicable to me, and we talked earlier, I had a heads up on this. It's fraud, it's deceit, it's ultimately going to kill people. It is not good for our health, period. I don't know what kind of consumer protection we could ever come up with to cover this kind of practice. Obviously, no one gives a damn.
It's interesting if we go back just a little bit to how politics gets involved. You remember the term cool? That was country of origin labeling. And there was a real resistance from some of the Big East to get that established. And a lot of American consumer groups and so forth pushed forward and got it through.
Yeah, that's why in the markets, folks, you'll see whatever the fruit or vegetable is, often you'll see product of whatever country, Guatemala, Mexico, it doesn't matter. Product of New Zealand, whatever.
So as protective devices come on board, it seems like there's always a way around it.
Yeah.
And the way around it now is American packers are buying South American fruit and vegetables.
By the boatload.
By the bulk, bringing them in, packing them here in this country, mm-hmm. putting them in their box, mm-hmm. their label, mm-hmm. and then redistribution of them.
And they don't have to. Apparently, they're not forced to comply with the truth in labeling in terms of point of origination or the country of growth. They don't have to do it, or what?
Well, if there are rules and regulations, they're not enforced. Basically, today, as I understand it from people that have observed it and I believe really know what's going on the inside, mm-hmm. we see this stamp on these cartons and boxes and containers by USDA, stamped by USDA. And we think, well, it's been inspected, it's been checked, it's safe, it's free of harmful chemicals, whatever. Truth of the matter is, all that stamp means is, if there were supposed to be 22 pounds in that carton, and there's 22 pounds in that carton, bang, there goes the stamp.
That's it.
That's it.
So the USDA stamp on there means nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Now, here locally, this is a very diverse valley in the center of Washington State, and we have normally a lot of irrigation water, and there's a lot of various crops raised. It's been a pretty big asparagus producer.
Mm-hmm.
With a local processor. Well, the local processor has canceled all the local asparagus production. They have left their facilities here intact, but they have gone to South America to purchase their supply. And they will be bringing that in here in bulk. Nobody knows what is used on that chemically or how it's treated or how it's watered. It'll be brought in here. It'll be packaged in the United States. Hopefully it never says product of, because it certainly isn't. But,
and what you're saying is a couple hundred yards away from this facility can be an asparagus farmer who has nowhere to sell his crop.
Oh, absolutely. They're going out of business, and they don't know what to do. They don't know where to turn.
They need to set up their own processing plant somehow in a cooperative effort. But then how do they get in the distribution network, right?
That's right. You've got such control of the marketing aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And of the pricing structure, unless you're one of the giants playing their game, you don't get in. You're locked out. But the sad part of this thing is, as growers, we go through strict quality control measures.
I'll bet you do.
We have to take constant classes, accredits. We can't even purchase a chemical unless we can prove we're knowledgeable and how to handle it. And train our workers how to handle it, and we go through quite a process.
Right.
And that's good. There's no problem with that. That's fine. But my feeling is we must also insist on those same standards for every imported product.
Obviously.
Yeah. Why should we as producers lose sales to competition that's exploiting labor and fails to meet our health and safety standards?
So Juan Gonzalez and his orange business in Mexico don't have to do anything. But Ron Wilson and his apple business, anybody else growing oranges up here has the same kind of hoops to jump through, classes to take, certifications to gain, and all the rest of it.
You got it.
And not only that, but Juan can sell his oranges at 20 cents a pound wholesale and make a fortune down there, and it requires an American apple or orange grower to get a lot more for his or hers just to break even. So the big money is being made not only by the big companies buying from Juan, but Juan is making a fortune.
And producing at labor that's in the vicinity of a dollar and a half a day.
That's right. That's the point.
And producing without any kind of environmental protection agency.
No controls, no oversight, nothing.
Paying no county taxes, having no sanitary conditions out in the field so the workers can use the bathroom or wash their hands after they've used the bathroom.
Well, I think you can all look back to NAFTA and see where this is all going. Not only is the American middle class being essentially spayed and neutered and radically reduced, if not wiped out, but American business is being so grotesquely eviscerated by this kind of practice that there won't be much left in a few years. This is amazing. It's all being homogenized into the globalist plan of one hemisphere, in this case for food, and finances as well. It's all moving to the one world venue. This is amazing. We got another hour to go with Ron Wilson and Bill Shepherd. Stay tuned. Much to talk about. We're going to do a lot more along these lines of food awareness for you next hour. Okay, welcome back. Jeff Rentz, we're taking a look at American agriculture now in severe crisis. And you've been hearing things, I think, in the first hour that many of you will not forget for a long time. And hopefully we'll come up with some solutions to this. I can't imagine what they might be now, but in this hour, many more things to talk about with Ron Wilson. He is an apple grower in the Yakima Valley in Washington, and Bill Shepherd, who's been working to help farmers for a long time, a very knowledgeable man whose family has been in agriculture for generations. Okay, Bill, you have helped farmers in many ways, but for some of them, there is no help. And tragically, more than a few have taken their own lives. Tell me about that.
Well, we had a counselor that started with the Willie Nelson's Farm Aid Program in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And she started handling calls that were a crisis situation where a farmer had just come back from his lender, whether it might be a bank or the United States Department of Agriculture, their loan office.
Oh, wait a minute. I didn't know the USDA was in the loan business.
Oh, the United States Department of Agriculture has been in the agricultural loan business for most of the 20th century.
I thought it was a regulatory agency. I didn't know it was in the loan business. How interesting.
No, they have a division of ag credit, mm-hmm. whereby they loan farmers money every year so they can produce below the cost of production.
All right. Go ahead.
So, well, at any rate,
the farmer comes home.
And the farmer comes home, and instead of just being told that he can't make his loan payment and something's going to have to be done, while he's there, the credit officer is browbeating him, intimidating him, humiliating him, and telling him that he's a sorry manager for not being able to make his payment. He should be embarrassed to even be called a farmer, and that the farmer just should go off and do something else because he's not fit to farm. And this lady started tracking these people that she was interviewing, and finding out later that they were burying these people. And she started getting coroner's reports with the permission of the families and so forth, and found out that in a 12-year period here in Oklahoma, 509 farmers had committed suicide after coming back from these lenders that were humiliating them because they couldn't make their loan payments.
In one area of Oklahoma.
In the state of Oklahoma that she was connected to.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened in that 12-year period.
Incredible.
And so, you know, these farmers never got mad. They never went home, got mad, and went back and did something to the loan officer. There was never any instance where that happened. But there's countless instances, you know, over 500 instances where they went home and committed suicide because they felt like that they weren't fit to do something that they had been taught by their family for generations. They had a total family background in learning how to farm and knowing how to farm, but because they had a weather catastrophe or a market catastrophe, these are circumstances over which they had absolutely no control.
Or a distribution catastrophe.
Oh, well, of course.
Whatever.
But whenever you're out producing, you really don't have the insight to see what's going on in the distribution side. Probably more than 90% of farmers don't have a clue what their real problems are because they're spending sun up to sundown out in the production side of agriculture. Dealing with things sometimes in the middle of the night,
right,
4 o'clock in the morning, whatever.
I understand, sure. Some of the most dedicated, hardest working people on the planet are American farmers, always have been.
Yes.
And the results speak for that. But now the results are being pushed aside, being priced out of competition, being shut out. This is a tragedy. This is horrible. How much worse has it gotten in the last 10 years? Is it getting worse all the time?
Well, for example, we take our yearly allocation from Farm Aid and from the National Farm Crisis Center here in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I get a call, the first thing I ask the farmer, are you able to buy food for your family? Do you have utilities on there at the house? And in most instances, they don't have the money to buy food for their family. They don't have utilities on at the house, maybe not all the utilities, maybe one of them or something.
What a disgrace.
Like that.
What a shame. What a tragedy. What a shame for this.
And we're out of money every year by July the 1st, on the funding that we have coming into this state. And whenever you talk about me making a recommendation that money go out, we're talking about that we would send out $200 or a maximum of $400 to a family farm farmer and his family to try to provide some kind of immediate assistance. But you know, can you imagine in today's world how far that goes?
It goes nowhere. I might pay an electric bill. What size farms are these people often involved with? How big?
Oh, from sometimes 300 acres up to 3,000 acres.
And they can't support a family.
They can't support a family and even buy food. And that's why, you know, we have family breakups here. We have total destruction of not only the family, but a total destruction of the entire community structure of middle America.
Destruction of an American way of life.
Right, exactly. You know, I can cite you right now a farmer that is living in a less than a 10x10 pump house where the house was built to keep his water well from freezing, and he's been living in that for a year. And this is a farmer that was farming 2,000 acres of land until he couldn't make his payment because of the market conditions, and these market conditions were brought on by maybe a reciprocal trade act, maybe it was NAFTA, maybe it was the GATT, or
I understand, or others to come. Ron Wilson, there is no way American farmers can compete with the trash cents on the dollar garbage coming up from Latin America. It can't happen. They can't do it.
Even if they
could do it, the distribution centers could shut them out at any time anyhow.
And what is so sad about it is that this tends to be policy. It's not law. There are laws on the books in the land to prevent this from happening. They're totally ignored. This is policy, and the policy is basically turn the whole food sector over to some of these giant corporations. And as long as there is food in the stores, the leaders that be don't worry about that. They go on to other things. And the farmers in this country, I don't know of a single farmer that wants a subsidy or wants aid. They simply want to be able to do their best and get their share out of the market itself. And they're willing to compete with anybody, anywhere on the face of the earth, raising good, clean, healthy food. The American consumer needs to remember that nobody on the face of this earth will raise safer food for the American consumer than the American producer.
And yet in the markets now, as Bill said, 63% of the fruits and vegetables in the stores are raised outside of the U.S.
And I think that was for the year 2003.
Could be 67, 68% by now.
Yeah, right.
And the trend is quite clear.
Now, I also pick up sometimes in other discussion groups where people say, well, yeah, that's not good for the American producer, but maybe the American consumer is saving a little bit by this third world country's food coming in here, so on and so forth.
Right.
I have a friend who travels the world, and when fruit is in season in one area, he purchases it and sells it to areas that are out of season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting from his worldwide viewpoint and perspective what he's hearing from these producers in other parts of the world. And he says continually, shockingly, what he hears from them is they're all standing around basically gleefully wanting and waiting for the American producer to go down so that they can form a cartel like OPEC and raise their prices to it.
And hold the American consumer hostage.
Exactly.
And
now
meanwhile,
the
American farm system will be in a shambles and unable to function properly. This is amazing. And sure. Exactly. I can see it. All right, hold on. We'll take a break. Come right back. This is bad news and worse. Back in a minute. Okay, and back talking with Ron Wilson and Bill Shepherd about this tragic state of American agriculture and the independent farmer. For those farmers, Bill Shepherd, who play ball and join the big corporate monopolies, is their life quality assured, or are they still in some kind of jeopardy?
Oh, they're in daily. They're experiencing daily pressure from the contracts, maintaining the performance with the contracts that mm-hmm. the large corporations force them to operate under.
And if they don't perform?
Oh, they lose their contract, and all of the monies that have been spent in order to get in that contract position are just lost.
So you make a deal with the devil?
Well, yes. Like, for example, if you're growing chickens for one of the large chicken processing companies, and you see that you could do something to make your chickens healthier, and you do something to make your chickens healthier, and you have a higher survivability rate than other contract growers, then you're immediately dropped because you're determined to have done something that gives you a competitive edge, and you're prohibited under the contract to do that.
It sounds almost like communism.
Oh, well, that's just the tip of it. I just mentioned chicken growing as an example. I could give you that. The same thing happening with grape growers in California or you name it in whatever part of the country. It's milk producers in different dairy
right.
states having the same identical situation.
So you go to work for the big corporations, you do it exactly the way they want, or you're out.
And if you object to what they do, for example, the introduction of unsafe chemicals and
hormones, pesticides, whatever.
Then if you object, you're out again. You've lost your contract, and all of your money that you have tied up into producing is gone, bankrupt. And that's what I deal with is I deal with people that have had contracts. We spent $500,000. We did everything we were supposed to, but because we didn't want to give our chickens every day arsenic. Then we objected to giving them arsenic every day. Then we were out.
Great. All right. Let's. This is an amazing story. Let's talk about organic farming, so-called organic farming. Now, many people know that organic farmers are becoming more and more in demand, as it were. I don't know if the distributors and the distribution centers see it that way, but the consumer does. Talk to me about organic farming as you know it in the apple business, Ron Wilson, and then we'll get Bill's view on this.
There has been considerable advances made raising apples organically. The biggest problem is the coddling moth or the worm, and it helps greatly. If your particular growing area, or if you as a grower are in a rather isolated area and can control your environment, and they're doing a really good job of it, their costs are very high. Their yield into the pack, or their pack outs per acre, is very low because the consumer is educated for nearly a perfect product.
Doesn't look like a Norman Rockwell apple or an orange or whatever. You don't want it.
Right. It takes me back. I was one of the first ones in this area to raise the Gala apple.
Oh, really?
When they came into bearing, I had them packed at a local packing house, and there were some Chinese buyers there. I'm sorry, Japanese buyers there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were excited. And they wanted them all. And we agreed on a price.
All of them?
They wanted them all. We agreed on a price. They kind of tried to work me over a little bit, and I refused. And those days, the demand greatly exceeded the supply, and was able to make a pretty good deal with them. And after we got through, we shook hands, and everything was settled.
Mm-hmm.
The main buyer came up to me, and he shook my hand, and he thanked me for raising a really good eating apple. And he said, "We Japanese, we buy different than you Americans." And I said, "Oh, how's that?" And he says, "We buy for the mouth. You Americans buy for the eye.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Cosmetic
sure.
effects.
Yeah, like
so,
everything else in our culture.
That's, yeah, right. That's one of the problems the organic people have run into, and they have to battle everything. It's even to the weeds, and mm-hmm. in the apple production, it's very controlled, and it truly is organic. Now, here's something your consumers could, your listeners could watch for in buying organic apples. We were in Oregon last summer, and went into this little store, and I saw this. It was a family, little family store, mom and pop store, and I saw this big sign, organic apples. And I'm always curious, and I wandered over there, and there was another sign, just regular apples. Well, I picked up the organic apple, and I looked at it. It had a label on it, and I went over to the guy behind the counter, and I said, "Are you the manager here?" And he says, "Yes." And I said, "This apple that you're saying is organic is not." "Oh, yes. Oh, yes." And I said, "No, it's not." "Well, how do you know?" And I said, "Well, I happen to know a little bit about apples. But you have a label on this apple. And that label does not start with a number 9. And if you go to buy an organic apple and the label numbering does not have the number 9 on it, they're pulling the wool over your eyes."
All right, caught him. We'll pause. Ask you to hold on right there. We have to do this break. We'll come back and continue with the story in just a minute. Number 9 on the label. And you've all seen organic fruit. They usually have 2 labels, at least the ones I see. So check them out. Be right back with Ron and Bill and continue after this. Okay, back with Bill Shepherd and Ron Wilson. All right, Ron, you're in the mom-and-pop store. You eyeball the apples, you figure out right away that the so-called organic apple is not organic because of the label. You call the guy's attention to it, and he did what?
Well, I left it at that for that day. We stayed overnight in that area. I went back the next day, and his organic sign was down. Both apples in both bins were priced the same. There was no difference.
Yeah,
and we laughed about it, and I told him my background. He said he didn't realize that somebody had stiffed him.
Oh, of course. It's never anyone's fault anymore. It's always they're the victims.
Right. You know, this is heavy stuff, Jeff, for your listeners, I'm sure. Those of us who have been in it, it's something we live with every day. For my money, agriculture and manufacturing is really what built this country. And as you know, both of them are in the dying stages.
They're in their final stages. It's certainly, when you look at General Motors and Ford being $500 billion in debt or very near to it, no hope of ever getting out of it. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. And as producers, I sense the people I talk with, the lack of fairness. There's a lot of countries we cannot export into. Our nation still uses food as a whip over some other countries of the world.
Yep.
It's really a strange thing that's going on. It was interesting, kind of humorous. Maybe add a little humor in here. Talking to a fellow, and we were talking about all these different rules and restrictions and costs we have that the other countries seemingly don't have. And he says, "You know," he says, "I feel like a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest." He says, "I want my other leg back so I can fight fair." And
wow.
I don't know how to get the other leg back. We don't know what to do. We don't know where to turn. There just doesn't seem to be any answers.
Well, don't look to Washington.
Right.
Don't look to big agribusiness. Who are your friends? The American consumer are your friends, but how do you reach them?
Well, and all your ag committees and is made up by big corporate interests who have positioned themselves in that, and the lobbyists and so forth. So here we are. It's just a huge paradigm shift going on before our eyes.
It is a shift, and I honestly, I don't mean to sound negative, but I can't envision, I'm not a professional farmer, I can't envision anything from my perspective, and you just said it, that could reverse this trend. How are you going to do it? You got people in Latin America talking in realistic terms about forming a cartel and literally holding the American marketplace hostage, and they can do it, They have the means and the mechanism. They certainly have the will. What are the American farmers going to do, the independents? They're going to play ball with the big agribusiness companies and go under contract slavery, indentured servitude, if you will, or they're going to fold.
That's right. You think an oil cartel is scary. Just think about a food cartel.
Food is the ultimate weapon, of course. People don't think about it. This whole American culture of ours, just-in-time shopping. The supermarkets don't have big backroom warehouses anymore. If the trucks stop running, the supermarkets are empty within a day. That's it. People don't understand that. The thread has never been more tenuous. And now with the American manufacturing industry and the agricultural industry literally being put to sleep before our very eyes, what future do we have as a once proud and strong nation? We don't. America is being changed with great intent, with deliberation, and with great precision and skill by a few people who are running the planet, who don't want a strong and independent America anymore, for reasons that I've talked about for years. Bill, let's talk about organic labeling and what it currently means. What did it used to mean first?
Well, it used to mean that if you were talking about a box of apples, that every apple in the box was organically produced. If you were talking about a frozen dinner at a supermarket, you were talking about every component of that frozen dinner. If it weighed 11 1/4 ounces, all 11 1/4 ounces of the meat and the two or three vegetables that were in there, every component was organically produced.
100%.
July 2003, USDA so graciously changed the definition of organic to allow that only in that you could label something organic if at least 25% of the total content was organic. So, for example, that store owner that Ron Wilson was talking about could legitimately have bought what he thought was a box of organic apples, but only 25% of the net weight of that apples of a 40-pound box, in this case only 10 pounds, had to be organically produced. So, in the case of the frozen dinner, only 25% of the 11 1/4 ounce had to be an ingredient that was organically produced. The rest of it could just be the normal chemical ingredient. So, what conscientious agricultural producers have done across the nation is that they have dropped the concept of organic, and they've gone to a more meaningful a concept of chemical free.
So I've seen that. So that's what's behind that.
Yeah. So if you see a farmer that is selling something chemical free, he means that everything that he's selling is chemical free, and he's not complying with the mere 25% requirement of USDA.
USDA slipped that one through. No one I know has heard about it. I didn't hear about it, and I'm very conscientious about what I buy. So the American consumer is getting screwed both ways. Not only are they paying more for what they think is organic food, but they're not getting organic food that necessarily is any more than 25% organic.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Right. I know.
Unbelievable.
The sad part about it is that the American consumer that is health conscious is really being
poisoned.
Snowballed into believing that this is totally healthy, when in reality it could be just as contaminated as anything else that he or she were buying.
Again, a gigantic, deadly hoax of fraud is being perpetrated on the American public. Another one. When will it end? This is astonishing. So, folks, you can just about write off having any confidence in the USDA's organic label. It only has to be 25% organic to qualify. Did you hear about that? I didn't. We know now. Be right back. Okay, let's get right back to Bill Shepherd. This issue of 25% minimum organic to qualify as USDA organic is outrageous. It is despicable. I just can't even begin to react appropriately to this because of so many tens of millions of Americans who are buying with confidence, or what they think is confidence, organic food, and it's not. It just isn't. What's being done about this? This is wrong. This is as wrong. Truth in Labeling, this is about, Bill Shepherd, about as wrong as it gets.
Well, yes.
That's my view.
I started, you know, the way I'm connected with Ron Wilson because I was looking for apples. And my mother is 92 and I'm her caretaker, and she's always told me all of her life, an apple a day will keep the doctor away. Well, I noticed that you could go into a store and buy an apple, cut a chunk of it out, and let it sit on the shelf or just out on the table, and sometimes you could go back an hour later or a day later, and it would still be just as...
Hey, I've seen the same thing, Bill, so
like
tell
us. Yeah, just like it was a freshly cut.
Okay, and, Ron Wilson, how does that work, Ron Wilson?
Well, consumers like products hard and firm, no decay, no softness. So there reluctantly are applied certain chemicals to these products to maintain crisp freshness. The sad part of that is it also delays and destroys the enzyme, and I'll let Bill discuss the enzyme side of it.
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, the enzyme side of an apple is the only reason why that it's so health-producing. That's the part that keeps the doctor away, is because the living enzymes inside that apple is what supplies you a constant source of healthy living enzymes, and life produces life. The drench that they're using to keep the apples so that they will stay for 12 months can penetrate through the skin all the way to the core, and it will completely destroy all the living enzymes.
When you heat any food past 110, 115 degrees, I forget which it is, all the enzymes die anyway.
115. Yes. But this isn't heated.
I understand. They're doing this with chemicals.
They have a brew of a drench that they dip all these apples in, mm-hmm. that penetrates through the skin, mm-hmm. and destroys it to the core, so that the supermarket operator or owner, they don't throw away any rotten apples. There's no rotten apples. There are no rotten apples after they drench it, because it just prevents any kind of further.
Well, they're almost embalming them, is what they're doing, in a way.
Well, of course. And how is that healthy? And that's, you know,
it's not. It's obviously not. All right. There are some food packages that say 70% organic. You'll find that occasionally. Whatever. 50% organic. Are they trying to be honest in their labeling?
Well, perhaps, if that's what they say.
Right.
But
again, the only sure way, I just want to get this on the table again, the only sure way, the best way, is to buy foods that are labeled chemical-free.
Yes. Yes. That assures you that 100% of that food, whether it's a single food, a fruit or a vegetable, or a product, has been produced without any chemicals.
All right, let's go back to that number 9 on the apple label. If you got a bin full of apples and they all have labels with 9 on them and they all came out of the same box, does that mean that they can label the 75% of the apples, Ron, that potentially aren't organic with that same number 9 label? I don't think that they'd stop anybody from trying it anyway.
You know, I can't give you a definitive answer on that.
Right.
There's, regardless, the safeguards that seem to be implemented sooner or later, for the sake of another nickel profit, they figure out a way around it.
That's the impression I get. Bill Shepherd, when I see produce in the store saying organic, organically grown, product of Mexico, how confident should I be?
Zero. Zero. You should have zero confidence that there's anything connected to a chemical free in that product.
Ron, anything to add to that?
Oh, it's exactly right. It's scary. You know, the Americans, take the safety of our food for granted. And regrettably, that's not a wise choice today. And I think to change the scenario that's going on the American marketplace today, the consumer, the general public is going to have to get involved and demand some truth, demand some answers. I don't know any other answer.
Well, the only other answer I can think of is to grow your own.
Well, you could find a way of being linked to a producer and buying direct from the producer. Guess where my mother gets her apples in Southwest Oklahoma to eat? We get them shipped here by the favorite shipping, one of the favorite shippers from Ron Wilson in Yakima, Washington.
You almost have to know your producer, don't you?
I eat the best apples that I know can be produced because Ron Wilson is producing them. So that's what, you know, and there's a wonderful opportunity for farmers to begin to think about using the internet to sell direct to consumers, but it requires a tremendous change in the way consumers are used to buying and the convenience and everything of going down to one store and buying everything.
What a wonderful idea, an online food marketing website.
Yes, and that's already in the works. I just have to tell you that will probably be available within the year.
Good. Well, please let me know. I will be here to support you 100%. In any way I can to publicize that. I'll put a permanent link on my home page. I get a lot of traffic, and I'll be happy to do that. That's good news. In the meantime, try to buy local. Try to get to know some of your local producers. Local farmers markets are pretty good places still, I would think, by and large, after listening to you gentlemen tonight.
Yes.
So
yes, they are.
Every community.
Sure, some of the best choices. Jeff, I want to thank you for tackling a very difficult subject here.
Oh, yeah.
And letting us tell it from our perspective as we see it. It's not easy to hear. It's difficult to say. But for the sake and the health of America, it needs to be told, and I just appreciate your efforts.
Well, thank you. I couldn't do it without you gentlemen and others like you who are trying to sound the alarm. We've got to work together on this, and we will. I want to have both of you come back in a couple months or whenever. You just let me know when you've got something you think our listeners need to hear about. I really want to push this, if I can, the internet idea, Bill Shepherd. I think that's extremely encouraging. Folks, do buy local. Patronize your local farmers market. Help make those people successful so they can grow more crops. Don't trust anything that says organic on it anymore from the USDA. Try not to buy produce raised overseas. Demand that your market print on the label at the bin of the fruit or vegetable you want to buy where it comes from. You have a right to know. And if it says product of the United States, as you know now, that's not good enough. You're going to have to demand more.
Just so that that your listeners will know that it extends to other areas pursuant to the Meat Import Act of 1979, 1,519,000,000 pounds of meat is imported into this country every year from third world countries. And that's a totally different story, but still in the same arena.
Right. And the grading, of course, of that meat is an inspection. And what the meat is grown with is wide open, totally unregulated. Again, this is an effort by the globalists to homogenize everything, to break down the Americas the Americas that we knew. North America is now being blended into one. Borders are being dissolved. The food we now rely upon to enable our bodies to sustain a reasonable level of health, good healthy immune systems and all the rest of it, is toxic. It is poison. It is often a lie. There is tremendous fraud. There is criminality. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is not our friend or protector under any stretch of the imagination. Those of you who have been with me for years know that. With Dr. Patricia Doyle, Dr. Lorraine Day, and others, we've made it quite clear the USDA is as corrupt as it gets, in bed with the major corporations which run agriculture, Monsanto and so forth. One final comment from each of you, if I might, Ron, very quickly, please.
Be careful in shopping. Shop wise. Wash, rinse. If at all possible, buy local. Get to know your producer. He'll give you the best product available at the moment.
Great. Thank you. I salute your courage, Ron Wilson, and your integrity very much. You're a friend of the American public all the way. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Bill, another heroic American farmer, you've done a marvelous job tonight, and you've helped for so many years, so many thousands of people. I don't know how to thank you, but thank you.
You're welcome.
Please keep in touch.
Will do.
Okay, good night, Bill, and good night, Ron.
Good night.
Bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right, well, there it is, folks, and I hope that's helped somewhat. If it hasn't, then you don't care. And I know all of you out there listening do care. When you go into the supermarket, read the labels, remember what we talked about tonight, and raise a little hell with your produce department there. If you don't get the answers you want, just say, I'm taking my money elsewhere. Find out where your local farmer's market is. Your community may have several, but shop there. And if your market doesn't tell you where the fruit or vegetable is raised, I wouldn't buy it, frankly. I think we're in that kind of environment right now. And as Bill said, it doesn't end with fruits and vegetables. Any consumable goods now are suspect. All right, that's our program tonight. Very important one. I'm going to take 21 hours off. I'll be online, of course, and we'll be right back with you tomorrow night.